Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has written his joke for 2021. It's Richard Herring.
Thank you very much. Nearly forgot what year it was. Hello, my darlings. Hello, my fine friends. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Welcome to another episode of Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. No, I was hanging around with all the people currently queuing to buy petrol. This is being recorded in late September for people at home, so God knows what people are doing when the podcast actually comes out. Probably killing each other for oxygen. They call it Rahalastapa anyway. Oh, my goodness. I've written a proper joke. Barman, what's the deal with that triangle with sides of all different lengths? Who's in this pub every time I come in? Don't worry, he's a regular. You have to laugh, I've got cancer. I'm better now. But I've had it, so it doesn't go. Good, pretty pleased with that. Proper joke, isn't it? It's a proper. I don't write many jokes, so, you know, I've got to make the most of them. Give them out for free. Good look. There's lots been going on. I had a weird night, an unsettled night of dreams last night. I had a dream where I was being, there was a very tiny rhinoceros, about as big as a rat, came up to me and then attacked me, really badly attacked me, with its hooves though, not its horn. And it was really hurting me, and I realised I was asleep, and I couldn't wake up. I was going, I've got to wake up, and I couldn't wake up. And I woke up going, ah! And my wife going, oh, God, are you all right? And I go, yeah, I've just been attacked by a tiny rhinoceros. Which I don't think she was expecting from the level of anxiety. She has proper anxiety dreams. Yeah, I was being upset. Probably something to do with my balls, isn't it? Probably is. In between the last time we were here, we've recorded the Champion of Champions Taskmaster. Yeah.
Can't tell you what happened, but just want to say that I don't think it's representative of the... Now, you know, if you listen to this podcast or not, you'll know I've got one pair of pants that cost £35. In fact, I think I revealed that to Alex Horn. I may be wrong, but I bought one pair of pants that cost £35, and I only wear them on special occasions, and I thought I'd wear them for the Champion of Champions. So I got them and put them on. And then it was only the day after I realised the pants I were wearing weren't my £35 pair pants. I'd wear them so... I spent all this money on pants, I can't wear them. And I've forgotten what they look like and I've put on a completely different pair of pants. So whatever the result, when that comes up, you can work out whether the pants were magic or not. Who do you think... People don't seem to think I would win that. The Champion of Champions was... between me, Lisa Tarbuck, Kerry Godleman, Lou Sanders and Ed Gamble. And let's see who you think... Who thinks that Lisa Tarbuck won? Cheer now. Who thinks Kerry Godleman won? Cheer now. Who thinks Lou Sanders won? Cheer now. Who feels Ed Gamble won? Wow. Who thinks I won? Well, that would be about my worst possible result. If Ed Gamble wins and I come last, that is the worst. We'll see. You have very little faith in me, you people. That's all I'm going to say. I'm still wearing my suit because I'm just wearing it while I can before I get fat again. Inevitably get fat. Hey, look, my book, Would You Rather, is probably by the time you listen to this at home out. Do go and buy that as a book, an audio book or an e-book. The audio book's different than a book, so you can get both. And I am running a half marathon for the hospitals that treated me in November. And if you would like to sponsor me for that, go to justgiving.com/monoball, which unbelievably that hadn't been taken, that address. No one else. I was running for that. So that's all going all right. That's going okay. We'll see how that goes. And the other thing I was going to say was the other morning, I inadvertently, not on purpose, I accidentally farted the three opening notes of Feed the Birds from Mary Poppins. Absolutely perfect. Wasn't trying to do it. You know, like Paul McCartney dreamed yesterday, didn't he? Do you think any musicians have... Hey... I'm not saying the Sherman Brothers farted that out. And that would be good for a children's musical. Well, we've got somebody who writes music as our guest this week, so we can find out whether she's ever based any of her songs on a fart. She is probably best known... I said I was going to treat her with the utmost respect after the terrible interview she had to go through in the 1990s in Lad Culture, and that's the first thing I'm going to talk to her about. Anyway, let's... She's probably best known for playing a nagging girlfriend in a Jackie photo story. But what's she been doing since then? That's what we all want to know. Will you please welcome the fantastic Louise Wenner, ladies and gentlemen? Hello, come in.
Hello. Hi.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm really good, how are you?
Good. I'm really good as well, thank you very much. It's absolutely delightful to see you. Have you ever been inspired by a fart for your
music? I feel that I haven't, mm-hmm. but now that I should be. I've missed out, clearly, and that will be the future.
It must have happened for someone, right? Someone must have done that and then just thought, at least for, that's a middle eight or something.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's that long, you've probably got problems.
Are they that tonal, though? I mean, are yours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was the Petterman who used to... There was an act called the Petterman who used to fart right. tunes. And there's Mr. Methane, I think, who's a current act.
Mr.
I think,
Methane?
Mr. Methane, who I think farts tunes.
So it's like, this is
Might
in
just
B.
do funny farts.
You know, D-sharp.
Yeah. As you get older, it's just something you have to be slightly careful of.
Though. Yeah.
It's not a career you can keep going. Tell us about...
longevity.
Tell us about appearing in Jackie magazine. Do you remember being...
Oh, my God. It was, like, the highlight. In some ways, still the highlight of my life.
Good.
Yeah, so I was, like, 14, maybe, and I went to a drama club, and they said, does anyone want to go and be in a Jackie magazine? Me, please. And I got to go and do that, and it was, like, I mean, I read Jackie magazine all the time. I longed to be in that, and it was... that's as good as it gets.
It's pretty good. I think being in a Viz version of the Jackie Mac, because Viz used to do it, and that was the only... Viz used to take the piss out of those. In fact, one of the... I know backstage I made every question I asked you about myself, but I'm about to do it again now. I once dated 50 women in 50 days for a show I was doing.
Okay.
One of those in Newcastle, one of the girl I dated had been in a photo story in Viz.
Right. So, well, she's...
Yeah, but she didn't want to see me again.
She was too highfalutin.
She was too highfalutin. So, look, I've read your book, which... autobiography book. I know you're a novelist now and you've written many novels. I've written your... It's got two different titles, your book.
Yes.
Which one do you prefer?
Different for Girls.
Okay, it's Different for Girls.
Which and they changed it because they thought, well, boys won't buy something that's got the word girls in the title.
Yeah, that they will.
Yeah.
Especially...
You say that.
If you put it...
In the right way.
If you put it three times, they definitely will.
Right. That was my mistake, obviously.
It's real. Well, I love it because, because you and I are roughly, approximately the same age, unbelievably, looking at us, because I look so much younger, right? But you look exactly the same as you did in the 1990s, which is terrifying. It's basically you're very good for anyone born in the 1960s. You don't have to be, but it's just entirely, even down to you studying Vanity Fair for A-level English.
Yeah, is that what you did?
Yeah. every sort of point you hit is resonates. Yep. But then especially for me, because then it's about you being famous from about 1993 to about 1998 before sort of not being famous anymore. And that is, it's like it's written with me in mind. Yeah. But I like, there's just little things in it, like you talk about having Anne perfume.
And yes, my first girlfriend,
that was the perfume she had as well.
You can still smell that, right?
Well, whenever I smell it, you kind of go, is that Anne Anne? I think, like, when I was younger, I'd occasionally go, is that Anne Anne you're wearing? Yeah. And the girls go, wow, how did you know that? But now, if you do it...
Bit weird.
Yeah, it's a bit weird, because they're mainly teenage girls who wear it. Is that Anne Anne? it really resonates, but I think that's it's interesting because you're a fairly, I mean, not nerdy child, but you were.
I was pretty nerdy.
You're pretty
nerdy. Yeah, I was. I really was
nerdy and
glasses, asthma.
Yeah,
I was like really shy kid. You know.
Yeah. And so it's a fascinating sort of story of you kind of coming out of that and. A, getting into Jackie, which is very impressive, and then even after that, getting onto Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
We both presented Top of the Pops in the same year. We never met before,
no.
I don't think, but we basically, there's so many, I think again, for me, not making it all about me, but if you'd gone to my school of 1,000 kids and said, one of the people at this school will one day present Top of the Pops, who do you think it is?
Yes.
I think I'd be about choice 996.
I think me too.
It was three kids who were below me.
And see, that's the thing. That's the thing that kid needs to know at school, right?
Yeah.
The 999 kids needs to know that they're going to be, you know, here right now.
Well, it would have been nice to have known it at the time, or at least everyone else to know it.
Yeah, yeah.
Then Joanne Thompson might have shown me some interest. She'd know.
The NANA could have been different.
It's too late to go back. Can't go back. That's what I've said. Let's talk about the band starting up. And what I kind of find interesting in that, you know, you were quite canny about getting famous and getting discovered, and you, to the extent that you had a fake review that you.
Yeah, so we faked an NME review because no one was coming to see us. No one was like paying us any attention whatsoever. So I wrote my own one, went to a printer's and got it printed up and put in exactly the right typeset, headline, and made it look exactly like it was NME review.
Yeah.
Then we went around to all the record companies and said, look what they're saying about us. It's amazing. They're saying we're brilliant. We are brilliant.
Yeah.
Look. And it was kind of, we were talking about that before. I mean, just that kind of confidence that you sort of have when you're starting out, I think... It was just, I would have done anything at that point to make it work, I think.
But it's really canny. It's really clever. It's a clever thing to do. And obviously not everyone thinks of that. And also you hire, for an important gig, you sort of put an advert in the stage.
We hired some dancers. Yeah. Obviously, and also you do gigs and no one comes to your gigs. And you basically have to sort of pay people to come to your gigs almost. You know? Yeah. We put an advert in the stage and we said we were hiring people to be in a video, and if they came and danced and really looked like they were really enjoying the gig, they would get to be in our video, and they came. You know, and I felt like really bad and yet not that bad because it helped.
Yeah.
It was good.
And it did help, and so it worked. And so it's sort of interesting that that's because it, without any direct connection to that world, and you've come from just...
But I think it's partly because I came from sort of a pop background, because that's what I grew up with. I grew up with pop music. I wasn't an indie kid. I hadn't really read The Enemy or The Melody Maker or any of that stuff. I didn't care about that particularly.
Yeah.
So because I came from a different background, I was kind of, it was more of a sort of almost got show busy, you know? It was like I was into that sort of side of it.
Yeah.
So when I came into indie world, I didn't really know my way around it. I didn't know how you were meant to behave. And I found it quite weird.
Yeah,
sort of odd, and it wasn't where I came from at all.
But it's sort of so perceptive to spot a way through that, and to, I mean, I think like reading the book, obviously, like you sort of signed your first contract without really thinking too much about what that might.
That was a big mistake.
That was a mistake. That wasn't so canny.
That was less canny.
Yeah, but it sort of does. You know, I mean, it does matter, but it sort of doesn't matter.
Yeah,
as well.
It was just that we'd been trying for so long. It was like, just sign it.
Yeah,
take it, do it.
Yeah, and so, you know, how much... So you're saying you're sort of more interested... Was it more interested in being famous? You were interested... You were very into music, right?
Hugely. It was like, it was everything. It was like...
Yeah.
It was just an escape from my growing up, my family. My family was fairly difficult. Actually, I don't write about much of that book because I didn't want to do that. But it was quite troubled, actually. And it was an escape. So music was the way I got somewhere else, and I went to travel to a different place, and I loved it. I loved everything about it. And it was the thing that sort of saved my teen years. So I loved music, but I also was really okay with the idea that you might be famous with it as well.
Yeah.
I thought that would be the great thing. That would be the thing that sort of saved you and made everything wonderful. It isn't that at all.
No.
But that's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true. I mean, that's, again, that's sort of things that resonates. So I think like a lot of people think, oh, because I think a lot of people, and you're sort of feeling in this book that you were bullied a bit at school. And, and so it is, you are feeling like if I get to this thing, then everyone will look up to me or wish they hadn't bullied
me. I wanted to write songs. I wanted to be a songwriter, you know.
Sure.
It's like that was the thing. That was the thing that I loved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a very interesting book in terms of that and going on. I thought also like compare because Sleeper have come back and which we'll talk about more and I sort of feel interesting listening back to that music and it still does stand up the stuff
Thank
from
you.
The 90s it's great.
Thank you.
But the new stuff is a different kettle of fish but also it's a more mature band obviously.
Yeah, very
but
much.
But it sort of feels like you write in the book about being influenced by The Jam and like Smithers Jones that kind of song.
Yeah.
It feels like the early songs were. Like a looking at other people and criticizing, you know, doing stories about other people. Whereas,
it's funny that because we say it's critical, but it's not. It's just kind of that was what was around.
Yeah,
that's what's around you. It's just sort of. It's more sort of like it's observational rather than a critique of anything.
Yeah,
but
I listen because I used to love The Jam and but also I love Ben Folds. But there's loads of songs that both those bands have done. That are just basically look at these people doing proper jobs and aren't they all cut tied down and I'm free and I'm amazing. Which when you're young, I think you're right and think I'm being cool. And then you get to being in your 50s and go, that's
most
people.
I mean, my dad was Smithers Jones.
Yeah.
That's kind of why it resonated. That's what he did. He got on the tube every single day with his same sandwich and his same, you know, in his bag. It was just like he'd have his Marmite and cheese sandwich every single day and he would leave at a certain time, come back at a certain time. It was regimented.
Yeah. Good sandwich though.
Good sandwich. Cheese and Marmite, man. It's like it's the bomb, isn't it, really?
It is some people. but then when we become older and, you know, I know that being a musician and a comedian are still not those kind of proper jobs. But you do understand a bit more as a parent yourself.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. I think the new music seems to be more grounded in your own personal experience.
Yeah, I wanted to write about it. I wanted to write about motherhood and all that kind of stuff because I don't think there's many songs about that. And
no.
I don't think there's many to deal with that experience and getting older and what that feels like within the context of being creative and this industry and all of that stuff felt much more interesting.
Yeah,
it's well, Marmite sandwiches, I guess. Yeah.
Well, you're definitely the best. I went to see Sleeper in, was it 2018? You were,
I think it was 2018. Yeah. Yeah,
it's the best gig I've been to in the last 10 years.
Thank you.
It's the only one I've been to.
There's always a kicker.
The book is interesting because it is for me, because it is sort of this parallel life. But I was just so into comedy. So you were taping Top of the Pops with an audio player off the TV, and I was taping. Yeah. I was doing the same to comedy shows. I was.
So were you learning sketches? Were you kind of like sort of copying them and learning?
Yeah. So I was a nerd, a proper nerd, because I wasn't even into music. So at least you were cool and into music. And I was learning Monty Python sketches and Derek and Clive sketches.
Yeah,
and
that's pretty cool.
I'd tape Kick Up the 80s, but only Rick Mayall's bit, because the rest was terrible.
Yeah.
I'd wait when you had a video as well.
So you'd literally mute the
video. Yeah, just be ready to go for it. So it's, you know, sort of is that same sort of journey that we went on. But, let me ask you an emergency question while I stop floundering around. It's my own fault. And I wanted to ask you. There was one I wanted to ask you. I'm going to ask you one from the back first because I've written a couple down. Who is your favourite Steve?
Steve. My God, I can't think of a Steve. Who's your favourite Steve?
I think my favourite Steve... I'm going to go for Stevie Martin, who I recorded my audio book with for the moment. That's my first. Steve Coogan, it's all right?
Well, I might have Stevie Wonder then. Only because when we did our first... We did a TV thing on something called The White Room. I don't know if anyone remembers that, if you remember watching that. Yeah. And the whole sort of... All the electricity went down and we were doing it with Stevie Wonder, and he just decided to do an impromptu sort of acoustic gig for everyone just while we were waiting for it all to come back on. And we just sat there and had this sort of private gig with Stevie Wonder. So that was pretty cool.
Okay, that's better.
So that's Steve.
That's better. Steve once did an impression of Frank Spencer. But no one else.
Do I get a prize or something?
You do. Now, like, I did allude to this in my introduction, but like it was with Sleeper, it was a very sexy band, right? I think it was a sexy band, but in the 90s, and the whole band and the look and everything of it was set, and there was one or two sexy songs. But I think the problem for you was that it sort of came, the 90s became this very laddish time. And what I think Sleeper, what you were doing was this. You know, it was sexy, but it was sort of empowering for women, right? I think, in that it was a woman talking openly about enjoying sex.
Yes.
Yeah. Partly.
Yeah.
And it sort of got co-opted by lad culture.
Yeah.
As all Britpop female-led bands did in the end.
Yeah. And I never know how to answer this question or how to talk about it, because it's like, it's sort of like you continue that narrative. These questions are never asked of male artists.
No.
So it's like a man in a band is attractive. It's kind of a sexual performance. It's a sexy song. It just isn't an issue. It's just not something to talk about. It's just, well, of course, that's what you would do. But if you did that at that time in a band and you were a woman, it was just a different story. It was just like, that was the headline, that was the thing you couldn't escape from. You did that once, that was the story forever. That was the thing that you was constantly talking about. So it's interesting because that narrative continues and it kind of hangs over you almost endlessly, and that becomes the thing that is definitive rather than just an adjunct to whatever else you're doing.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. But I think for women, surely this band was like sort of for girls.
Yeah.
And I think so many girls were influenced by you. And I look at the 90s and I look at you and I look at the girls that, you know, were around the night, and they were all copying your style.
Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of what's nice about coming back, because you get to hear those stories and you get to talk to people, and the social media's, I mean, it's a mixed bag, isn't it, right? Yeah. It's like, it's pretty toxic a lot of the time. But you get to talk to people and you have those conversations, and people tell you that, you know, when they were teenage girls, they loved it and this is why, and what was important about it and what made them sort of... gave them their own sort of confidence around those issues. And that's lovely. But you didn't feel that at the time. All you just felt was this kind of incredible sort of reference, judgmental, defining thing that you would go to an interview and you'd be just asked about your attractiveness. And that would be the subject. And that would be what you're meant to talk about. And you'd never get asked about the music you made. In fact, they would ask the guys about the music. They'd ask me a question about, you know, what I look like. And then they'd say to the guys, oh, how did you write that song? You know, that literally would happen.
Yeah.
So that was pretty strange.
Yeah. Well, it's, and it's sort of through the 90s, I guess, it sort of, it became even more so. You know, the Spice Girls were sort of the end result of someone realizing, oh, let's just make this for men, yeah. Basically, really. I mean, in a way. Do you think, looking back, because I look back at it and I go, that is, you know, you were doing something that was so different than what had come before, and it was. Do you think, looking back, you overcome that unpleasantness, or was it just too much?
Have I overcome it?
No. Well, no. Do you think what you did makes it worthwhile, even if it was uncomfortable and unpleasant for you at the time?
Yeah, look, I think all the women that were around at that time did amazing stuff, and I think they were pushing boundaries. I think they were kind of, you know, it was a completely sort of new landscape, and I think they were doing things that were quite important.
Yeah.
And what I don't think is that most of them are given credit for it. And I think it's interesting that a lot of the women from that time completely dropped out and they left and they just walked away and they thought, I've had enough of this. There's only so much of this I can sort of deal with. And they didn't. They left music permanently, you know, for a long time. Either they didn't come back at all or they came back 20 years later like we did.
Yeah.
But lots of the guys had just carried on, breezed through it, you know, and they sort of in and out. But it's interesting that a lot of those women were just kind of like, all right, this is not for me. And I think that's a shame.
It is a shame, and also the music is, you know, looking back and revisiting it this week, you just think these tunes are absolutely, I think partly because you were coming from such a different place, you weren't, watching you on Top of the Pubs, you're like, cool, but also you're really absolutely enjoying yourself so much, and you can't...
You weren't really meant to enjoy it, you're meant to always look furious and cross.
It's great, because you do look cool and furious, and then every now and again you're just really laughing and smiling.
I can't believe I'm here, and it's
absolutely fantastic, but the music, musically, it's great, and quite unusual, and very individual, but I think that's because of you not coming through... It wasn't traditional.
And I think, and that's quite interesting as well, because lots of women that I've talked to do come from a slightly different perspective, not to generalise about it.
Yeah.
But they weren't collecting their sort of full B-sides for sort of 10 years and sitting and looking at their kind of vinyl and sort of, you know, worshipping it. It was slightly different. So it was slightly a more sort of commercial perspective that they came from. But that wasn't, you weren't ever meant to say that. It was not allowed.
But you talk in the book very honestly about other bands and the rivalries and the jealousies and
all hated each other.
Yeah,
yeah.
And but that's not necessarily the case. Have you seen them? I mean, like, you tour with Blur, and you're very amusing about Blur, and Blur being they had a couple of hit singles by the time you toured with them, and had their own caterers.
So, I mean, they were the cool kids. They were so the cool kids. So we supported them. And if you're a support band, it's really, you're kind of at the lowest of the low when you're the support band. And you go in and you don't get paid really. And you go into their audience and you sort of wait to be booed or not. And you would have to sort of convince people that you were meant to be there. But they had everything. They had sort of this incredibly sort of lavish stuff going on, these huge catering trucks, they were cooked meals, they were cooked like sort of Christmas dinner on a Tuesday just because they fancied it, you know, and it's like, and they had this great big rider. We'd never had a rider. We'd like bought some ginsters and a packet of crisps and we made do, you know, right? And they had this lavish rider with like an incredible sort of cheese plate. They'd every night, they'd have a incredible cheese plate, and we would literally sort of go in and look into their room and go, oh my God, they've got champagne. And they've got cheese. And the cheese looks really nice because we're quite hungry because we've only had crisps.
Yeah.
And then, so one night we stole their cheese. Which seems fair, right? Right? So we stole their cheese and we stole a bit of their wine and a bit of their beer and stuff. And then Alex and the rest of the band came back and they went freaking mad. They tried to get us chucked off the tour for eating their cheese.
He does like cheese though, doesn't he?
Yes. That is where it started. That is where it started. Who knew this would be a whole career?
Why wouldn't they share their food? I mean, it's because I bet they were chucking loads of stuff away at the end of the day, wouldn't they? Why weren't they not sharing it around?
They wouldn't share their cheese. That's all I've got to say about them.
I can't believe you didn't just automatically weren't allowed to go and queue up and have some food with them.
You would think so, wouldn't you? It's
for like, being on their show.
You're the support band. Here's some camembert or something.
But you're quite, you're indiscreet in the book.
I try.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting level to be at where you've been that successful that you've hit the top of the charts and everyone remembers you, but it's not, I think if you'd stayed being a massive pop star, you wouldn't feel that you could be as honest as you are.
I mean, I loved it a little while because I had to sort of not care about it. And it's like, oh, I don't care. I can say whatever I like.
I just think that's always interesting when I have guests on and they're comedians and they become big Hollywood stars, maybe, they are less likely to talk about how mad, you know, I don't know who is. Let's say Tom Cruise. Let's see if that comes up in the next one.
For instance.
Yeah. So they're more likely to go, yeah, no, he's all right. So it's kind of interesting. But, you know, the boys, it seems, were all living that rock star life. And, you know,
there was a lot of
I mean,
that.
There's stuff in the book that if you put two and two together, people might get into a bit of trouble for now.
Well, who knows? I mean, I just kind of like, there was lots of that stuff going on. It was just, and that was sort of normalised, I suppose. Yeah. I never got near that. People would come and sort of bring me their poetry.
Yeah.
So all the boys were sort of getting groupies and it was kind of, that was all happening. And someone would just come and say, I've written you this.
But like you say...
That was better. That was better. I don't know.
You say in the book you wouldn't really want to get oral sex from a 16-year-old boy anyway, so it's...
No. It's probably... Probably not on my wish list.
It was different times.
I would rather fart to my next album. Probably. Yeah.
Well, they might do that for you. That's the only good thing about hanging out with young boys. Hold on.
In a second.
You've got something. But you're very frank about taking the drugs and stuff that were involved in that.
So
you were in that
one.
You were in that part of the rock star world.
Yes. I mean, that was all around us. So there was like having a cup of tea, you know. So there was lots of coke. People were running around on crack. I mean, that's what it was like. You know, when we were sort of going to LA and sort of watching one band just kind of running around the pool, you know, off their heads on crack.
Yeah. Well, there's quite a lot of where there's a thing where you talk about, I think you're in Sweden or there's a Swedish band and you talk about them docking, which I didn't think was a real...
People are sniggering. I feel like you know. I feel like some people know what this is. And how do you know what this is? And yes, this man called the Wannadies, he had a very specific tradition that he used to like to do. It's called docking. And if you really like someone and you just met them, you would take them to a darkened room or not. Yeah. Just backstage. And they would each sort of wrap their foreskin around the other person's foreskin. Or not if you didn't have a foreskin. There was no distinction.
Okay, it was allowed.
It was fine, it was allowed.
Okay.
But yeah, that was happening and they were sort of, I don't know.
Just as a friendly, just
this
as a friendly
just like
greeting.
A regular night out in the 90s. Running around on crack, wrapping your foreskin around someone else's foreskin that you'd never met before.
And then stealing some cheese.
Stealing cheese.
Yeah, you don't want to do that from the
quite
docking part. That's what it's all about. So do you look back at it?
I miss those days.
Do you miss it?
Richard, yeah. I miss those days.
I mean, it sounds like fun to be... I mean, it sounds like you've almost had the perfect ride with it and that you experienced the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, the lows and then getting bigger and bigger. And then... You know, and then getting out of it.
Yes.
But then coming back to it, which we'll talk about later. But again, it's the same with comedy, you know, that you're the flavour of the month and then they'll move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And if you don't perform as well, so your second album didn't perform as
and
well.
And you kind of know that going in some respects. You kind of think, well, what's our limit? What's our time? What's our time going to be? How long are we going to get? But then when it happens, you never expect it. Yeah. It's like, shit, the time is now.
But also, you're very honest about, like, that you're always looking up to the next thing, so you get gold discs and you're worrying about platinum discs. And...
Yeah, I think that's the weird thing about it, is how... Oh, God, so you're never satisfied. You know, the things that you thought you'd be satisfied straight away, you're on Top of the Pops, you're doing those things.
Yeah.
You're like, well, God, but we haven't got, you know, what's our midweek? Where are we at? Where are we going to be in the charts? Where's our... gold, platinum, etc. album. Yeah. What's the next thing? And you're always looking at who's doing better than you. Yeah.
And do you feel now that you're not? So now you've come back.
I couldn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Now.
So, but that's all really. I think that the passage of time and getting a bit older, and you sort of think this is.
Yeah, that's great.
Because in the book, it sort of feels like, oh, we've put a full stop to this. This is the end of this.
Yeah.
You know, we stopped the band, and I'm sort of glad, and I'm glad we ended it at Brixton or wherever it was. And then you made that decision to. Come back to it.
Yeah. And when you come back to it, it's like you're just not thinking about your position within it.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm doing this for the sheer fun of it. And if it isn't fun, then don't do it. And it's kind of And that's all it's about. And that's really freeing. It's like, but I imagine it's like when you're doing your own thing. It's something very democratic about doing podcasts because you have control of it. You decide how, when, what, and it's yours.
Yeah.
You're not waiting for someone to okay it and say, you know, allow you to do it. So there's none of that anymore. So it's kind of this thing you have control over, and it's just completely different.
And was it always going to be that you wanted to write new music as well, rather than just, I mean, you are still doing the old music as well, but one's a new album, one's a mixture of new
sort of a lost album of old songs that we've had sort of on hard drives for 20 years that we'd never sort of put out, and we just went back to because we had nothing else to do in lockdown, and we went and sort of finished all those songs.
Yeah,
but new music, I mean, I didn't know that I could do that. That's been the real joy of it, I think, because I didn't, you know, because I walked away from it so completely and firmly. It's like, I'm not looking back, I'm never going back to that again. So to go and start writing songs again was great. I loved it.
And do you regret, because it just feels like it's picked up and it's something you're really good at, obviously, and you're really good at melody and lyrics.
Yeah.
And do you regret having that 15 years or whatever in between?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know how we'd have done it. I mean, I had brought up a family, and it's like, it's all, you know, it takes up so much time, all of that.
Yeah.
But I think, going back to what we were talking about earlier, it's part of that thing. I didn't see myself as a songwriter because I hadn't sort of allowed myself. It's only as I've got older that I have the sort of confidence to say that about myself, that I'm a songwriter. Mm-hmm. I didn't say that. I was like, oh God, I'm sort of like, I'm in a band and, you know, there's so much going on and everyone's calling me this, that and the other, and is that what I do? Is that what I am? So to call myself a musician, that's almost like, going back in retrospect, it's given me the confidence to say that.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel people are now taking you seriously?
I don't know, but again, it's kind of, you finally get that sort of confidence comes back.
Yeah.
And you also, you don't give a shit.
Yeah.
At the same time, do you know, because you're not waiting for people to validate you in that way. And it was all about that. You had to see, it was always from someone else rather than from yourself. So now it's kind of, this is just what I do when I feel like it, because it feels good.
Yeah.
And that's right. It was quite nice.
Yeah. It is very nice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Let me ask you this. Who is the most famous person that you've been in a lift with that you didn't get into the lift with?
Rod Stewart.
Yeah, I thought it might be Rod Stewart. You mentioned this in your book.
Yeah.
What happened? But did you get stuck in the lift with Rod Stewart?
I'm not stuck in. Stuck in the sense that I couldn't think of anything to say to him.
Right.
It's like you're in a lift with Rod Stewart. And I felt, and you have this sort of compulsion. I don't know what you're like when you meet super famous people.
Yeah.
But you feel this compulsion that you ought to say something incredibly brilliant and witty and interesting.
Offensive, that's what offensive. I go for, yeah.
That also works brilliantly. Yeah. I couldn't think of anything either offensive or like, oh, guess what, you know, what floor are you going to? I was like, yeah.
No, I'm proud. I met Rick, I stood behind Rick Mayall, who's my, you know, my absolute comedy hero in a BP garage in Shepherd's Bush Green. And I didn't even say anything to, you know, he was being quite Rick Mayall and addressing the queue.
Yeah.
And I was right behind him, and I didn't even go, oh, I just want to say, I think you're really good. I really regret it.
Really,
so I'm
good,
I'm very, unless I'm drunk, which I wasn't because I was driving my car. then, you know, it's, I'm pretty bad at talking to anyone, which is a shame. What would you say to Rod Stewart if you...
Don't you know what? In fairness, yeah. I don't think I had that much to say to Rod Stewart. No. What can I say?
I'd say
I don't blame myself. I don't overthink it.
I'd say you've done very well, mate.
You've done well for yourself.
Given the limitations.
You're shorter than I was expecting.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's done incredibly well. I mean, he's not terrible, but...
I should have said that.
You're not terrible, mate.
Richard says you're not terrible.
See, if status quo, I just kind of think, you know, you listen to their music, you think, how the fuck have you managed to get away with that? How did you manage to get away with that all your whole careers? And it's still going, there's only one of them left and it's still going.
It's probably good you can't talk to people.
Yeah, it is.
Thank fuck for that.
I do. I'm terrible. How did you enjoy? Was did Top of the Pops, because obviously that was a big thing for you. Music was your thing, and yeah, being on Top of the Pops that first time.
Yeah.
Did it live up to the expectations?
Well, you've done it. It's very ordinary, isn't it? Back there, it's kind of like this sort of Mrs. Miggins BBC canteen, yeah, and tiny little corridors, breeze brought rooms. So it's kind of, it's got an incredible sort of ordinariness about it. And the bar's like not flash at all, is it? It's really ordinary. But then, and then you go on and then the music starts and the lights come on and the Top of the Pops thing's behind you. And you're like, oh my God, Top of the Pops. It was sort of better watching it than it was doing it, weirdly, I think.
Robson and Jerome were number one the second time we did it, I think.
And what did you say to them?
Well, I got into trouble. Robson or Jerome's mum rang up the BBC and complained about what I said because she felt I'd been rude about them. I can't remember what I said, but I remember that I did get a complaint from Robson or Jerome's mum.
From the mum. This is the best thing.
But my
thing
overarching ever. Memory of that is just how bad the girls all smelt.
Oh, no, and what wait. I.
It was
what
just
do
like.
You mean?
Just like it was a room of like really overexcited 15-year-old girls.
The girls in the audience.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they really just screaming and smelt really awful. And I thought, what kind of pervert would get on and want to have sex with these girls? How did Jimmy Savile, man, how did he do this? How did he overcome the disgust he must have felt? Just at the stink. It's awful.
No links was going around. Not enough links.
They were very, you know, it was a weirdly scary. They were very into Robson and Jerome, more than you'd think.
Can we just roll back to what you said to upset the mum?
I don't know what it was.
No. Was it to do with the sweaty girl?
It wasn't. I remember them. They liked one of them more. The one who's in Game of Thrones, they didn't like as much.
Okay, fair enough.
That's Jerome, right? The one with the broken nose. So when Robson went up, they went, ah! And then Jerome would come on and nothing would happen. And they stopped the recording and said, why are you cheering for Jerome? Come on. But that wasn't on the telly. Come on, he's all right.
It's funny that.
But it's such a bizarre thing. I look at that because it's going to come up soon. They're repeating all to the top of, yeah, the top of the ops, yeah, that they're allowed to repeat. So, you know. So the 90s is fairly safe. It's all Mark Goodyear and yeah, Nicky Campbell. I think we're all right. But they're on 1991, and I was watching it the other day. And I can say this to you because you weren't in a band in 1991 or not on TV. And the music was fucking shit. Colour Me Bad. Remember Colour Me Bad?
I feel like
you will remember when you see them. They were like a boy band, but they looked like sort of old men dressing up as boys. One of them had really squinty eyes. There's one good-looking one. The other one has really like squinty eyes. Right Said Fred. Whatever happened to them? That's, you know, when you hear Right Said Fred and you really listen to that music, you go, God in hell. How did we listen? But it sounds like it's written on it sounds like it's played on a Casio.
It was.
Yeah.
Sure.
But that's it. Boo.
It was sort of a bit of a dead period though, wasn't it? There was that sort of period in between the end of the 80s and then the beginning of something new in the 90s.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, yeah.
Well, I think so. REM were briefly on that, one of the ones I saw. And you supported REM.
We did. We supported REM at Milton Keynes Bowl. Milton Keynes.
And that's where you'd seen David Bowie.
And that's where I saw David Bowie in 1983, I think.
Yeah.
So like the idea that we got to play at Milton Keynes Bowl where I'd seen David Bowie was like extraordinary. Yeah.
I was annoyed there isn't an audio book of your book because I like to listen to audio books. So do an audio book.
Yes, I might do one of those.
But there's a podcast where a man reads out the chapter of you being at the place with R.E.M. at the Milton
Keynes. Yeah.
So I've listened to one chapter on audio book.
Oh,
I read the book as well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
one you didn't have to read. You're like, I'll just listen to that one. You know?
It would do well. But so you got pulled up. The Michael Stipe pulled you back from backstage to.
He sang Happy Birthday to me. It was my 30th birthday, and he sang Happy Birthday to me in front of all their crowds. So we just it was quite bizarre. So you sort of backstage and the REM sort of backstage, and people who are watching from the side of stage quite different to who was on our side of stage. And it's all like supermodels and really famous people and. And he just sort of calls me over and he goes, come on. He's like, yes, and gets the whole crowd to sing happy birthday to me. It was, yeah. Oh. It was really amazing until I realised he'd done the same to another band the night before. So I think he'd done it to someone in Belly the night before. And I was like, oh, fucking hell. You can't have anything to yourself, can you? That means something.
And, of course, you worked with, and this is another similarity, you worked with Dale Winton. I worked with
Dale Winton. Yeah, he was really, he was brilliant. He was, I mean, you worked with him, he was exactly as you imagine, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, exactly it was, as you imagine.
Not to make it about me, but when we...
Come on, let's
we,
just go for
when
it.
When we had him on, like, he was on our radio show, and he guested on our radio show, and it was before it really broke. We watched Supermarket Sweep and really liked it.
Yeah.
And he came on... And backstage he was going, and it was all just done at universities, and backstage he was going, oh, I think I've made a terrible mistake, this show's really bad. And
really?
I don't think it's going to fly. And we're going, no, it's great. Honestly, we really like it. And he went out, and that audience, wherever we were, something like Warwick University or something like that, went absolutely insane. And he kind of, I think that would, that doing great? That gig was great. The moment he realised it was going to be okay.
Yeah, so we got him because he wasn't huge yet. So he did sort of pastiche of Supermarket Sweep in our video for In Between Her, and it was like... And he was just lovely. Yeah, he was great. Kind of sort of filthy and, brilliant.
You said, I saw an interview, you said there's a story you couldn't tell about him.
Yes, there isn't. I might tell you.
I thought now he's dead, you might be able to tell me, but no.
I'm never saying.
Okay. I'll tell you. I'll tell you next week. That's my opening monologue sorted for the next week's show. And like Fleetwood Mac and Rod, Jane and Freddie... There was some relationships within Sleeper.
Yes, there was.
Now, I'm more interested in Rod, Jane and Freddie than in the Sleeper relationships.
Does this involve Bungle or does this not involve Bungle?
It doesn't. You know, Jane was in a relationship with Rod.
Right. I never knew this.
Yeah, and then...
And then Freddie.
Then she went to Freddie. And that was just the three of them.
Poor Rod.
Yeah, but they carried on.
Well, you do.
Yeah.
You do carry on.
Freddie's died now. Freddie just died. No feelings about Rod, Jane and Freddie?
Other than I loved them growing up, yeah.
It worked, sort of created some tensions in the band.
So I was in a relationship with John. We formed the band in Manchester. And it was difficult because our relationship was kind of ending. And then we signed a record deal.
Yeah.
we're a bit like, shit, what do we do? You've got to sort of stay in the band and how do we facilitate? And then I sort of fell in love with somebody else. And
He was also in the band.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's also true. and then we're still together. Though.
Yeah.
So yeah. So that's a nice ending.
Yeah, it is a nice one, but not for John. No. But it's still pretty bad. But do you think, well, A, I wonder whether if I'd had sex with people in my double acts, whether they might have gone a bit better.
Maybe if you'd at least docked with them.
I could have docked, didn't even dock.
That would have been helpful.
But do you think... But I think
Damon Albarn gave me a lecture, so he came over and this is very early on, we were in the cheese episodes. He said, don't ever go out with someone in your band. That's stupid. And maybe he was right.
What's easy for him to say, isn't he?
It's true. Yeah.
He's in a band with three blokes. He's not going to
go out. Exactly. But,
okay.
I'm sure there was.
but do you think creatively, you know, for when you're working with people, a little bit of grit in that oyster can create the... Not literally. It can... Metaphorically speaking, my audience is so dirty-minded. That's not a good thing. If you're docking, don't have... Just check for grit.
Because that's not going to go well, is it? That's going to be uncomfortable.
Do you think that... Because there was tension, right? Because it was...
There was.
Even before. So
yeah. I don't know. No. I mean, it kind of... We got some songs out of it. Let's put it that way. Yeah,
I mean,
that's always helpful.
It
right?
is sort of crazy, but it's also it is also
and
sort
it's
of
also quite it's quite a common story. Yeah, in band, it so is. It's like and no bungle. It was fine.
No bungle. Still can't think. Would you rather be in Rod, Jane and Freddie or Fleetwood Mac if you had to choose?
Fleetwood Mac.
Would you? Yeah. I'd rather be in Rod, Jane and Freddie. I'd rather be in Jane. Stevie Nicks.
Stevie, I'd rather be Stevie. Would you? Nicks.
nice Jane was. sorry, I just like to apologise. Just generally speaking, and you did do. I mean, you crossed over with the comedy world a bit as well in the 90s. So you got onto the panel shows. You were on.
Oh my God! Yes.
You were on Shooting Stars.
Shooting Stars.
With Vic and Bob, who you say were nice in the books. They come out of it.
Yeah, they were nice.
Yeah.
But obviously you had to put up with the thigh rubbing.
But then the thigh rubbing is at least that's a main... I think that's a pastiche more than...
I think that is. No, it was fine. They were actually lovely,
And Never Mind the Buzzcocks.
That was interesting.
Who was the host when you've been doing it?
It was Mark Lamar, was it, I think. Yeah. But I don't know. Fucking hell. It was such bullshit.
Well, it's hard with Buzzcocks going on as the musical.
Yeah, I suppose what surprised me, and I don't know whether I haven't done any of that for years and years and years, obviously, but they write the jokes.
Yeah.
So someone comes to you backstage and they go, here are your jokes and here are your things you're meant to say. And I was like, well, fuck that. I'm not saying those. That's a bit shit. And then I just said quite random things. You know what I mean? It's like... Yeah. But I didn't know that's how it worked. I didn't know they got the guests on and they came, here are your list of jokes to say, and this is when Mark Lamar says this, you'll say this. It's like, right. I didn't know that.
No. Terrible. It's all artifice.
It's all artifice,
it's all
isn't
terrible
it?
Artifice.
You've given me my lines backstage, but you you've given me the bungle line.
Yeah. Should have worked harder on the script, shouldn't I?
I wasn't going to say, but there you go. Do your homework, mate.
Should have worked harder on my bit, so then you've done very
that's
well.
That's right.
I know you've talked about this a lot, but you did with the stuff that you do after Sleeper had finished. Was it really a solo album you were working on? But it was still with the, or was it a Sleeper album you were working?
It
on?
Was. Yeah, it was a solo album.
Yeah.
And we were doing it at George Michael's studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were working with a couple of producers who were doing stuff with him. And it was really lovely. And George Michael would just wander in when he had some downtime and sort of come and listen to what we were doing. And he sang on one of those songs. So one of the songs we've got on our Lost album has got, if you listen really carefully, like really carefully, you can just sort of hear George Michael singing.
It sort of strikes me that you still kind of maintained your sort of feet on the ground. And when you met... Having been such a big music fan and then getting to be alongside all these people.
He was lovely.
Yeah.
He was absolutely gorgeous. And I was kind of, I think I stopped being sort of super impressed with people. I was just like, as soon as you sat down with someone for 5 minutes, it's kind of, it changes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But his life was obviously so far removed from ours, and he was always on the phone, like organising his helicopter to the south of France with Jerry Halliwell, who's like sort of telling us stories about Princess Di and Elton John and all that kind of stuff. It was like, but he was gorgeous. Yeah,
were the stories about Princess Di and Elton John together?
I will tell you later. As I said, some things are for after the show.
Okay. I'm amazed there's things you didn't put in the book. The book is so frank that I can't believe you sort of went, oh, no, I'll hold back on that.
Well, the lawyers look at it and they go, I can't do that.
But you can say all that. The lawyers let quite a lot through. And so I don't know who that is. That's fine. Princess Diana, I've heard of her. I'm going to ask you another emergency question. Here it comes. What's the most surprising personal thing that has leapt out at you?
Leapt out at me, actually?
Yeah, it could be any. You can interpret it however you want. Has anyone ever leapt out at you?
I feel like there's not been much leaping.
No.
What kind of leaps?
Well, it was like someone could have been hiding behind a bush and leapt out at you.
No.
No.
There's not been any.
Okay.
There
was. I'm trying to think of how I would answer it
how
as you.
How would you answer that?
There was. Well, you stole Paul McCartney's seat. That's nearly someone leaping out. You leapt out of Paul McCartney. Almost.
I did. I just thought I had nowhere to sit at the Q Awards. I couldn't find my spot. And I was like, I'll just sit next to Bob Geldof. That'd be fine. And then Paul McCartney comes along. He's like, actually, I think you're fine. I'm sitting there. It's like, okay, all right. I'll go back to my Jackie magazine. That's where I belong.
And you stole Paula Yates's belt.
Yes, yeah. So I had a Saturday job in Mothercare.
Right.
In the summer.
Yeah.
Just after I left school. And Paula Yates came in and she was making a programme, like I think it was like some sort of about babies or something. I don't know. But she came in this incredible outfit and she just came into our staff canteen, and she had left this wardrobe. It was the first time I'd ever seen someone, you know, sort of famous that brought in a wardrobe of clothing. And she was so cool. I just thought she was just the best thing. And she'd left all this amazing clothing in our staff canteen. And I was like, oh, I could just have one of those belts. Could I have just a Paula's belt? I did take Paula's belt, yeah, took that home. But it didn't leap out at me. It sort of leapt into my hand without me quite expecting it to.
Okay, that counts.
That counts.
And so what do you think, with that, the whole... It's interesting in the book, I think, that 10 years and the way Britpop became this big thing, and then you're quite dismissive of, certainly once it was embraced by the Tony Blair government, that it sort of lost its credibility.
Well, I think I just thought that it wasn't... Coming from a kid that was really not very cool, I just thought it wasn't very cool to sort of mix... music in that way and sort of like just hang out with politicians. It just didn't feel right. I felt like it was our job to stand on the sidelines and criticize everyone rather than like get chummy with them. It just didn't feel right, really.
Yeah.
But I guess I wish I'd gone now. I think it'd be really fun, wouldn't it? It'd been a good party. Like,
could have stolen something.
I
stole David Cameron's sugar lump.
David Cameron's sugar lump. How did it be his sugar lump?
Well, it was in there. I went in to... It was something to do with Scope, which is a charity I work with, and we got invited by Samantha Cameron to 10 Downing Street.
Right.
And I kind of went on the tried to look around a bit, as I like to do. And I found a conference room, and that was all I could find to steal was a sugar lump. I kept it for quite a long time.
It didn't sort of melt.
Right, it did eventually, yeah. Eventually. Degraded eventually,
as things do.
Yeah, but...
Toilet roll or anything?
No.
No.
In Buckingham Palace, I got lost in Buckingham Palace. I wrote on a Royal Encyclopedia and they directed me the wrong way and I walked right into the centre of Buckingham Palace.
When you go into the middle, there was men with
machine guns and stuff, but right. I just walked past them. And it was also the day that all the G8 leaders were going to be meeting in Buckingham Palace. And I had a massive silver, it was a camera case really I was using as a briefcase at the time that I'd won in a competition. Yeah. And I walked into the centre of Buckingham Palace on the day that all the world leaders there with something that could very easily have contained a bomb. And it was, and then in the end, I knocked on the guards' windows and went, Dad, do you know where I'm meant to be? And then they told me this isn't a bomb, honestly. But I was in. Michael Fagan the whole thing. Did you hear that Michael Fagan wanked in the Queen's ear? Because that's what I heard. Did you hear that?
I did not hear that.
That's what I heard.
But now I know that.
Because we've got so many similar...
Wanking stories.
So many similar stories from childhood, the things that we'd said at school. That was what was said at school, that Michael Fagan had wanked in the Queen's ear. It wasn't when they did it on The Crown, he didn't do it. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen. That's the way I'm looking at it. So, have you written four novels?
I've written four novels, yeah.
And one of them about poker.
I'm shit at poker, but it's such a good game, isn't it? Did you play it?
Yeah, well, I did play a lot again, like about 10 years ago. I was playing a lot.
Yeah, it was a thing, wasn't it? It was really a thing, so 10 years ago, yeah.
Well, you could have come on my chat. I did a poker chat show. You could have come on my poker
really?
Chat show.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I went and did that TV where you play sort of poker on telly.
Yeah, I did that as well. How did you do?
Really badly.
Did you?
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it. It's really good. I mean, I'm not good at it, like I said, but it's really great. Yeah.
And are you going to write more novels?
I might. I mean, it's such a huge commitment, isn't it, a novel? But I might do that, yeah. I might do that when I've got some time to do that.
And so what is one of them is about the music, is about...
So the first one was about musicians, yeah. And I just thought, well, I'll write it, but I'll be like a guy in a band rather than a... Okay. I don't want to write my story, do you know what I mean? So I said, yeah. But it is the first one's a music one. Yeah.
Good. Well, we'll look at those. And so you were touring and it was sort of postponed by...
It was postponed. COVID. I think it was reorganised about 3 times. We just finished it, so we just did it this summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how's that? How's it been? Is it?
It was great.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. The gig I saw was absolutely fantastic.
It was, slightly gave me a nervous breakdown, but it was because we had to take our kids on tour with us.
Sure.
So that was quite hard because I've got 2 teenagers that did not want to be there, like really sort of moody, grumpy. Oh my God, I've got to watch my mum jumping about on stage. It's so embarrassing. Please don't do that.
But your daughter's been on one of the records, right?
She has, she has. My daughter's kind of into it. My son, like, not at all. Right. Like, oh my God, another Rosy fucking gig. Yeah, so taking your kids on tour is not the best, but the gigs were amazing. Yeah,
have they read your book?
No.
Do they know about, are they going to listen to this podcast?
They don't know about the docking yet. I think I might just let them, like, listen to this and I just throw them in and that'll be done.
Yeah.
It'll be done then, won't it?
Yeah.
Get it all out of the way.
I don't think you can really... I've written quite confessional biography, autobiography things.
Your kids are little.
My kids are little now, but they'll read it one day, won't they?
Yeah, maybe read it now because they won't understand it.
Okay.
Just get it done.
The champagne bottle up the arse bit. That's just a...
I think that'd be fine.
Christmas
be like,
transition.
That would just seem novel.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Would you like your kids to be in the...
No, I want them to be accountants.
Okay.
Yeah. That's absolutely better. My daughter's like, she's saying, I'm quite interested in sort of like, you know, going maybe to sort of like sort of do drama or sort of music. I'm like, you're fucking not.
And do you feel, do you still, because I think that just that image of you as this schoolgirl getting your bag flushed down the toilet and...
Yeah.
Been worrying about your asthma and all this sort of stuff and then becoming this, you know, becoming a sex symbol, whether you wanted to be a sex symbol.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you were, and you are very sexy. So I'm going to say it. I didn't masturbate over your poster like all the other blokes who interviewed you did. I don't know if that's more offensive than them telling you.
I was into comedy. About that, I will let you know.
I was into comedy and there was a very slim pickings in the comedy business. Emma Thompson.
Is that right?
Emma Thompson, Connie Booth, Pamela Stevenson. Those are the girls for me. What was I going to say? But you know, it must have felt amazing to have gone. You know, to have got to that.
Yes.
Have got to that stage where you know, as horrible as it was in lots of ways.
Well, I mean, it was great. You know, we went on tour and ran the world. Yeah. We like so did amazing things, and
you know, you watched Bowie and found it. You know, and you thought he was sexy, and so to be in that position where you knew
I think, you know, you have to sort of go and you have to do it, and you sort of own it at the time, which you try to do, and that is felt quite complicated. But now, for sure, it's like I'm really proud of it, and I think, you know, my kids, although my kids say come and tour this and sing all the stuff, they look at that and they also think it's a bit cool.
Yeah.
So they're like this brilliant mix of sort of embarrassed and also. That's quite cool, which I think is what you should be with your kids. You know, it's like you've got embarrassed them, and also there'd be something about what you did that they think is, oh, it's all right. That's all right.
Yeah, they're already embarrassed about me, and rightly so.
Yeah,
entirely. Look, the new stuff is fantastic. Do get the latest albums, This Time Tomorrow and The Modern Age, but also listen to all the old stuff because it's fantastic. And I'm glad that you are appreciating yourself as a musician and a writer.
Yeah, totally.
Because you should. You're absolutely fantastic. And ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause. Fantastic. Louise Wiener.
Wait. Thanks.
Wiener. You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Rich Terring, and my guest, Louise Wiener. Thank you very much to Scant Regard for playing this music so nicely. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Also to Chris Evans, not that one. No, not that one. Not the Telegraph editor. No, not that one either. The one from Go Faster Strike is him. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, everyone at ACAST and the British Comedy Guide, and everyone who knows me. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Get my book, Would You Rather? It's out probably about now. Lots of Would You Rather questions to keep conversations going wherever you get your books, ebooks and audiobooks.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.